the Chiss and their Parkian allies had the initiative.
Springhawk, Parkian 4?
Thrawn's voice came over the bridge speaker.
Acknowledged, Simakro said briskly. F-Prya, go! Parkian 4, go!
And as the Springhawk opened up with a withering laser barrage on the Armageddon, the nearest of Jixus's three stone crushers, in the near distance, off the Grisk's portside bow, one of the Parkian gunboats also leapt to the attack, its lasers spitting fire. A true Whisker Cub to Ground Lion matchup, and Simakro had no doubt that the aliens aboard the Armageddon knew exactly how such a lopsided duel would end. Only for once, they would be wrong. The Armageddon swiveled ponderously toward the Springhawk, its launchers erupting with missiles, while it also sent a salvo of small Dibber missiles to deal with the Parkian gunboat. It was a quick and standard response, no doubt, one requiring little concern or control, an idle swat against an annoyance while it dealt with the more challenging Chiss heavy cruiser now engaging it. The Dibblers arrowed toward the Pakosh, forming a tight cluster designed to strike and bore through the gunboat's bow, accelerating as they flew. An instant later, the lead Dibber slammed into the plasmasphere that Afpraya had sent, unseen amid the glare of the Springhawk's laser fire into the Dibber's path. The Grisks had only used Dibbers against Chiss warships in a single previous battle, utilizing the small missiles mainly to disrupt plasmaspheres or take out incoming breacher missiles. In those cases, the Dibbers had most often been fired singly or in pairs. Against a gunboat, though, the Armageddon's commander had opted for a more focused, clustered approach, which meant that when the Springhawk's plasmasphere hit and paralyzed the lead Dibbers, the others still accelerating behind them had no choice but to slam squarely into them. The last row of Dibbers were still plowing into the pileup when the whole group violently exploded. The Parkian gunboat was still far enough away that the explosion didn't damage its hull. The Armageddon's hull, too, was far too tough to be harmed. Unfortunately for the Grisk, that same durability didn't extend to the embedded targeting sensors. And as the Springhawk's lasers tracked and destroyed the Grisk missiles hurling toward it, and the Chiss electrostatic barriers fended off the enemy's lasers, the Parkian gunboat flew straight through the expanding cloud of missile debris and shrapnel and delivered a devastating laser attack to the Armageddon's blinded flank. The gunboat veered off just in time, dodging belated laser fire from the Grisk's unaffected dorsal weapons, then curved sharply around for a second pass.
Well done,
Thrawn said.
Secondaries, engage the enemy and keep them occupied. Primaries, begin your attack. It's time to end these threats.
Chapter 26. 15 Grisk warships. Rosku again ran the analysis through her head as she gazed at the images starting to swarm around one another on the tactical. All of them larger than her own light cruiser, three of them considerably larger, one of them ridiculously larger. And so naturally, Thrawn was sending her against the Sky Sweep, one of the mid-sized stone crushers. At least he wasn't sending her against it alone. Two other light cruisers from B'Keef's reinforcement group were hitting the Sky Sweep from two other sides, trading laser fire and fending off its missiles while simultaneously trying to slip in plasmaspheres and breachers. So far, only a couple of each weapon had made it through the Sky Sweep's point defenses, but those had successfully hit vulnerable areas Thrawn and Dar'Alani had identified and marked. If the Chiss were going to prevail, Rosku knew, that targeting data was going to be the key. So far, despite the Grisk warship's lopsided size advantage, the skirmish was playing out better than would normally be expected. Certainly it was going better than the records Rosku had seen of the last time Chiss warships had gone up against one of these things. And of course, Thrawn's numerical advantage meant none of his forces had to deal one-on-one with any of the enemy. Even though most of the Chiss warships were smaller than any of their opponents, attacking at 2 or 3 to 1 allowed them to keep the Grisks off balance and unfocused. In the distance, off the Orison's starboard flank, Roscoe could see Pakian gunboats and a pair of Chiss light cruisers buzzing around 2 of the smaller battle chiefs, keeping up the laser fire and plasmasphere attacks, while at the same time maneuvering to keep the 2 warships blocking each other's fire and otherwise hampering their movements. Beyond them, the Perala and Bokria had taken on another battle chief, and while both patrol cruisers were taking serious fire, they were still operational. But that could change at any moment. Roscoe had spotted the escape pod that left the Kilji warship and was immediately tractored across to the Fate Spinner, presumably with Gixtus aboard. Once he was on the bridge of his flagship and directing his side of the battle, the Grisk's superiority in ship size and firepower could quickly make itself felt. Roscoe could only hope that Thrawn was on top of things on the Chiss side. In the meantime, the Orison had a Grisk warship to destroy. "Continue laser fire," she ordered, checking the tactical one last time, then focusing her attention on the viewport. "Prepare 3 breachers! Launch on my command!" "Brace yourselves," Zyenda warned, as the Greyshrike shot straight toward the bow of the battle chief, trading fire with the Perala and Bokria. She checked that her electrostatic barriers were at full power, then threw a last-second look out the viewport to make sure nothing had wandered into their path. "Thrawn?"
"I'm on it,"
Thrawn's calm voice assured her from the bridge speaker.
"Perala, Bokria, stand ready to break off. 3, 2, 1.
In perfect unison, the 2 patrol cruisers ceased fire and veered hard ventral and dorsal, shooting off in opposite directions. And with the battle chief's commander presumably watching to see if the twin maneuver was a feint, if they were going to loop back around for a second pass, the Greyshrike drove straight through its forward point defense laser fire and skimmed along its port side flank, raking it with laser fire and dropping plasmaspheres and breacher missiles into its hull as fast as the launchers could fire them. A final barrage at the port side shoulder weapons mounts, and the Greyshrike was passed, heading toward deep space. The encounter had lasted barely 5 seconds, but it was enough. Even as Wikiv threw extra power to the thrusters, Zyenda could see on the sensor display that the full length of the battle chief's port side flank was stained with blackened spots where the breacher's acid was digging into the Nyx's alloy hull, its lasers and missile tubes torn apart by laser fire, its sensors frozen by the sphere's ionic blasts. "Damage?" she called, checking the nav display to confirm Wikiv had them on the correct exit vector.
"Not good," Galaxu warned from the weapons station. "Portside lasers mostly gone. Sphere tubes inoperable. Breacher tubes empty or warped. Portside aft thrusters also took a hit from the shoulder cluster and are down to 40%.
"Acknowledged," Zyenda said. So in those same 5 seconds, the Greyshrike had gone from a fearsome night hunter to a wounded grouser pup. The question was, had the Grisks noticed? They had. Even as the Perala and Bokria circled back and resumed their attack on the half-crippled battle chief, the Stonecrusher Emry had shaken off its own patrol cruiser and gunboat harassment and was charging after the Greyshrike, clearly intent on teaching a lethal lesson to the audacious heavy cruiser that had so severely damaged one of its smaller compatriots. And with the damage to Zyenda's portside thrusters eating into her acceleration, the Grisk knew it would have no trouble running them down. Fortunately, Thrawn had anticipated this result of the Greyshrike's attack. In fact, he counted on it. Across the battleground, the Chiss warship blasted away from Sunrise, clearly trying to get to the edge of the planet's gravity well and escape into hyperspace. Behind it, the Emry, one of Gixtus's 3 Stonecrusher-class warmasters, was charging in pursuit, clearly intent on bringing an end to it.
It was going to catch it too, Kilori saw. Even if the Chiss got to the edge of the well in time, the Emry was close enough to jump right behind it. And with the eerie skill of the attendant navigators, the Emry's commander might well be able to stay right on the Chiss's tail all the way to its final destination. Shifting in his seat, surrounded by the Whetstone's all but catatonic crew, Kilori settled back to watch the Chiss ship die.
Stand ready.
Thrawn's voice came over the Greyshrike speaker.
Greyshrike, jump on three. Activate field on one. Five, four, three.
There was the usual flicker of stars, and as Zyenda looked in the aft displays, she saw sunrise now in the distance behind them, but not too far in the distance. Thrawn had specified a very short in-system jump, one that would leave the Greyshrike visible to the Emry and encourage it to continue its attack.
180 yaw turn, Zyenda ordered.
The visual display showed the Emry was still back there and still coming toward them, but it was also still in space normal. And as Zyenda looked at the sensor display, she could see faint and irregular tachyon pulses as the Grisk warship's hyperdrive tried and failed to activate.
Now that's something you don't see every day,
Vimsk commented.
You do today, Zyenda said,
trying to put aside her lingering concerns. It had been only a few days since Thrawn first introduced them to the gravity well generator he'd taken from the Vagari pirates after his first clash with them, and which he'd now somehow managed to borrow or steal from the UAG vaults. At the time, and during all their practice runs, he'd continually assured them that the generator would continue to function properly through the entirety of the upcoming battle. Despite his assurances, Zyenda wasn't entirely happy about trusting her life to this device. But unless and until it failed, she and the rest of the Chiss battle force might as well make the most of it.
Vimsk, you have the edge of the field marked?
Yes, Senior Captain,
Vimsk confirmed.
Tagging it now.
Wikiv? Got it, Senior Captain, the pilot confirmed.
And I must say, it's nice to get an easy jump calculation for a change.
You're welcome, Zyenda said. Just don't get used to it. Galaxu?
Weapons ready, Galaxu confirmed. May I remind the Senior Captain that our port side is still a mess?
Noted. Wikiv?
Also noted, Wikiv assured him. I didn't see any serious damage on the Emry before we jumped, so I thought we'd work on its starboard side. We'll come out starboard to starboard, but I can roll us to bring in the dorsals or ventrals anytime you want. Just let me know.
I will, Galaxu said. The starboard should last long enough, but it's good to have options.
Stand ready, Zyenda said, shifting her gaze to the tactical.
The Emry was still coming toward them, still trying to get its inexplicably bulky hyperdrive to function.
A little farther, right to the edge of the Vagari gravity field. Here we go, she said.
Wikiv?
3, 2, 1.
Kilori was still gazing out at the distant drama, wondering why in the depths the Emry hadn't jumped. And really, with the Chiss warship having come out of hyperspace so close that even the Whetstone sensors could still see it, the Grisk should have charged in right on top of it, when, without warning, the Chiss was suddenly back. But it didn't arrive like a normal in-system jump, with the small and fleeting flicker that Pathfinders were able to see that marked the positioning uncertainty that even the most precise jumps never completely eliminated. Here, instead, the Chiss popped in with a precision that Kilori had never seen,
except on those rare occasions when a ship miscalculated and ran into the critical edge of a planetary gravity well. But the parameters of Sunrise's gravity well had been automatically calculated and marked as soon as the whetstone entered the system. Those limits were routinely laid out on a ship's nav display, and a single glance was all it took to confirm that neither the Emery nor the Chiss ship were anywhere near it. How could even the most gifted pilot have pulled that off? And then, as the Chiss warship sped along the Emery's flank, firing and tearing into its hull exactly the way it had done to the smaller battle chief a few minutes ago, he suddenly understood.
The Chiss had a gravity well generator!
Kilori felt his winglets freeze like ice with the sheer impossibility of it. There were stories about such things. Second-hand reports from distant regions that had only rarely been visited in person by anyone in the Navigators Guild. But none of those stories connected the technology to the Chiss, let alone suggested that the Ascendancy actually had one in their possession. But the Emery's pursuit had been stalled where it shouldn't. The Chiss warship's return had held a precision it shouldn't. And the lasers and other weapons tearing into the Emery's hull were proof that what Kilori had seen wasn't just an illusion. The Chiss warship reached the Emery's stern and did a hard yaw swivel, turning its lasers and breachers into a concerted assault on the Stonecrusher's main thrusters. And then, as if to underline the impossibility of what had just happened, the Emery exploded! Kilori felt his breath catch in his throat, his frozen winglets drooping as stunned shock gave way to stunned disbelief. A Chiss heavy cruiser single-handedly taking out a Grisk stone crusher? Like the presence of the gravity well generator itself, it was impossible. But it had happened. And for the first time since Jixtus had dragged Kilori into the Grisk war effort, it was no longer a given that the Chiss would lose.
I believe Jixtus has fully assumed command.
Thrawn's voice came over the Vigilance bridge speaker.
So it would seem,
Aurelani agreed, looking out the Vigilance viewport. Up to now, the giant warship Fate Spinner had floated motionless above the planetary surface, staying aloof from the melee and letting the other ship's commanders handle their individual battles without any attempt at coordination. She and Thrawn had speculated earlier that the warship's extended idleness was probably due to the time it was taking for the Whetstone's escape pod to be pulled into a docking bay, Jixtus himself to be extricated from it, and however long it then took him to get to the Fate Spinner's bridge. Chiss warship's passageways were relatively easy to get through, making for quick transits between different areas. Aliens, concerned with slowing down potential borders, though, might deliberately make such internal travel more difficult. But now, finally, the Fate Spinner was on the move, turning toward the Vigilant and Aelos, where they nestled together at the edge of the battleground.
You still want to play it as planned? She asked.
I think it's our best option,
Thrawn said.
The Fate Spinner is the most dangerous of the enemy ships. Jixtus has to be hurt sufficiently that he continues to hold back, but not so badly that he'll feel threatened enough to take his forces and run.
Aurelani felt her throat tighten. Unfortunately, he was right. Without knowing where in the chaos the Grisks were located, if Jixtus escaped, there would be no chance of tracking him down. And if that happened, the next time he challenged the Chiss, he wouldn't allow himself to be lured to some out-of-the-way place like Sunrise for their battle. The next time, he would hit directly into the center of the Ascendancy. He had to be stopped. Right here, right now.
Understood, Aurelani said. Stingfly, we need you.
Acknowledged, Vigilant,
Stingfly's commander said briskly.
Moving into position.
Stand by.
The Fate Spinner had fully turned toward the Vigilant now, lining up its bow and shoulder weapons clusters on the Night Dragon, and was nearly within combat range. Arulani looked past the Grisk's dorsal surface, searching the starscape for the nearest of the small asteroids Thrawn had moved close to sunrise 2 days ago, in preparation for this particular part of his battle plan. There it was, right where it was supposed to be.
Lock tractors on asteroid, she ordered Oskim. Full power!
Tractors locked, the weapons officer said. Alos?
Tractors locked,
Thrawn confirmed.
Admiral, your sight handles better than mine. You give the orders.
Acknowledged,
Arulani said. The Fate Spinner's distance and speed.
Tractor beams, activate,
she ordered.
Stingfly, stand ready.
Tractors locked, Oskim confirmed. Asteroids on the move.
Stingfly, your estimate is 3 seconds after the Fate Spinner opens fire,
she reminded the other commander.
Oskim, stand by lasers and spheres. We've got about 20 seconds before things get nasty.
Weapons and weapons crew standing ready,
Oskim said.
Barriers at full strength.
Arulani made a quick visual check of the battle, swirling in the distance behind the Fate Spinner, then paused for a long look at her tactical display. So far, things seemed to be following Thrawn's anticipated schedule, but hanging over everything, she could feel a vague sense of foreboding. The Vigilant Skywalker, Abeg, had reported a strange resistance during the last leg of their approach to sunrise, and Simakro had told her and Thrawn how the Magus had tried to take over Cheery, purportedly to help the Chiss win against the Grisks. Simakro's counter-threat had gotten Cheery and Thalias out of that situation, and since then, the Magus seemed to be staying out of it. The question now was what she might do if, having refused her help, the Chiss lost the battle. Would she seek vengeance against them as punishment when the Grisks re-established their control of her world? Or what if Jixtus was able to capture her? Would he be able to force her to see into the roiling futures of his next battles, giving him a preview of his opponent's moves in time to counter them? Would that make him and the Grisks truly and permanently invincible? But that was if Jixtus won. What would happen if Arulani and Thrawn prevailed today? The Magus had already made a bid for Cheery, and had even considered taking Thalias. Would she want Cheery and Abeg? And maybe even the Greyshrike's Skywalker? Betne? Arulani had no feel for how the Magus's mind worked, or what motivated her, or what limited her abilities to touch the beyond. But through Cheery, she'd apparently experienced a level of foresight power she'd never before tasted. And if there was one thing Arulani had learned about power, it was that for far too many people, a small and fleeting taste wasn't nearly enough. The Fate Spinner was nearly to combat range.
Stand by spheres, stand by lasers,
she called. The range indicator ran to the designated mark.
Fire spheres! Fire lasers!
The plasma spheres erupted from their tubes as the Vigilant's lasers simultaneously lanced out. The Fate Spinner replied with its own lasers, the barrage accompanied by a salvo of Dibber missiles targeting the Vigilant's spheres.
Continuous laser fire!
Arulani ordered. From the Vigilant's starboard side, the Alos opened up with its own lasers, Thrawn concentrating his attack on the Dibbers.
Fire spheres! Reach a salvo behind them!
Arulani added. 6 more plasma spheres erupted from their launchers, with 6 breacher missiles running close behind. Again, the Fate Spinner responded with more Dibbers. Arulani kept one eye on the duel, the other on the asteroid, steadily picking up speed toward the Fate Spinner's stern. If Jixtus was too distracted by the battle in front of his ship to notice the threat to its rear... And then, The Grisks finally seemed to spot the danger hurtling in behind them. The Fate Spinner's aft batteries came to life, the Spectrum lasers blasting away huge chunks of rock and metal ore as they tore the asteroid apart. Arlund watched as it was whittled down. And then, with one final massive salvo, the remnant disintegrated into a shower of gravel. The final bits dispersed across the starry sky, revealing the Stingfly's breacher missiles that had up to now been traveling in the asteroid's visual shadow. The Fate Spinner's lasers instantly shifted to the new targets. But the breachers were too close and going too fast, and the entire group slammed unimpeded into the Grisk's stern, their acid loads splashing against the hull and chewing into thrusters, weapons, sensors, and electrostatic barrier nodes. And charging in right behind the breachers was the Stingfly, lasers blazing, clearly intent on making its first kill of the day a memorable one. Thrawn had anticipated that delivering a severe blow to Jixis's flagship would force him to retreat from the battle while he made running repairs of the damage. But Harlani hadn't expected that retreat to take quite so extreme a form. Even as the Stingfly blazed its way in from the rear, and the Vigilant and Alos continued their barrage from the front, the Fate Spinner swiveled 90 degrees, turning its flanks to both attackers and launching a full salvo of missiles at each. Then, as the three Chiss warships shifted from attack to missile defense, the Grisk gave a blast from its main thrusters that sent it diving straight toward the planet below.
"Get those missiles clear!" Arlani snapped,
watching the Fate Spinner plummet into Sunrise's upper atmosphere. If Jixis didn't pull out soon, he would be out of the battle permanently. But it was quickly clear that Jixis hadn't panicked, and moreover, that he knew precisely his flagship's limits and capabilities. The Vigilant sensors were picking up the first atmospheric tendrils from the Fate Spinner's edges when the warship swiveled up again, pulling out of its dive and curving into a low orbit parallel to the planet's surface. One final pitch, and the Fate Spinner was racing along its new path in a sideways position. Its thrusters pointed at the ground, its bow and shoulder weapons pointed straight up.
"Thrawn!"
Arlani called.
"Nicely done,"
Thrawn said, with the cool admiration Arlani had heard from him when remarking on cleverness and skill from an enemy he nonetheless still fully intended to destroy.
"Pursuing him would mean having to deal with the uncertainty of atmospheric effects. But his current posture makes it nearly impossible to come up on his damaged stern. A relatively secure position, which also permits him to monitor and direct his forces."
"Unless we jam his comms,"
Arlani pointed out. "Might be something to consider."
"It might,"
Thrawn agreed.
"Once we've eliminated enough of the enemy that we can spare a ship for that duty, perhaps we can do that. Until then, I think we need all the firepower we can bring to bear."
"Good point,"
Arlani said.
"Orasin, how are you doing?"
"Glory,"
Jixis's voice bellowed from the whetstone's bridge speaker. Kilori twitched, his winglets going rigid. The Fate Spinner had disappeared out of his line of sight, diving toward the planet, and he'd wondered if the massive Grisk warship had been destroyed. Clearly it hadn't.
"Kilori, answer me!"
The vassal at the comm station was still bowed over his panel, clearly oblivious to the rest of the universe. Kilori hurried to the vacant command chair instead and fumbled for the comm control.
"I'm here, sir,"
he said.
"Are you all right?"
"No, I'm not all right,"
Jixis snarled.
"The Chiss have some impossible wizardry going on. Some way of disabling our hyperdrives while not affecting their own. Tell me how they're doing it.
How should I know?
Kilori asked, his winglets fluttering.
Tell me how they're doing it,
Jixtus repeated.
Or you will die. I still have more than enough firepower in hand to destroy the Chiss and their allies. Tell me Thrawn's secret, or you will die alongside them.
Kilori looked at the tactical, then out the viewport, then at the tactical again. Was Jixtus right about still having the upper hand? He was, Kilori realized with a sinking heart. Or at least he could be. Several of the Grisk ships had taken damage, and one of them, the Emery, had been completely destroyed. But at least 8 of the Chiss ships were no longer under power, drifting through space, clearly out of the fight. The only reason they and their crews were still alive was that the Grisks were smart enough to focus on disabling the more immediate threats instead of wasting time delivering complete destruction to the wounded. And when the battle ended, and Jixtus set about destroying his weakened enemies, he might well put the whetstone in that category.
I don't know for sure,
he told Jixtus, cursing his trembling voice.
But I've heard tales of a device called a gravity well generator that supposedly creates a field that simulates a planetary mass. Not like real mass, of course, but something that fools a hyperdrive into thinking it is.
He stopped, bracing himself. If Jixtus dismissed the idea as ridiculous, Kilori had nothing else to offer. But there was no outburst of disbelief. No scornful insult. No repeated or intensified threat. Jixtus was silent. Kilori peered out at the battle, waiting, his eyes darting to the side as one of the battle chiefs exploded. 2 Grisk ships gone, but the Fate Spinner and 2 of the Stone Crushers were still functional, along with most of the battle chiefs.
And you think the Chiss might have created such a device?
Jixtus asked at last.
I don't know if they could create one,
Kilori said, pulling his thoughts away from ship counts and back to the topic at hand.
But they could have found or stolen one. I'm just saying that it fits what I've seen so far.
That it does,
Jixtus agreed.
Where is it?
Kilori's winglets twitched.
I have no idea.
Where is it?
Kilori looked at the tactical, feeling panic rising in him again. How could he possibly know that? He didn't know how big it was or what it looked like.
Never mind,
Jixtus said.
I see it.
Kilori frowned.
Where?
The gunboat that's not moving,
Jixtus said.
The one still making that spiral plume of smoke.
Yes, I see it,
Kilori said. Odd he hadn't noticed how that particular gunboat hadn't moved even when the rest of the Chiss force went charging to the attack.
What are you going to do?
What do you think?
Jixtus bit out.
I'm going to destroy it.
I'm a bit busy at the moment, Vigilant,
Roscoe said tartly, wincing as another shot from the sky sweep burned through the Orison's electrostatic barrier and took out one of its starboard lasers. She and the other Chiss-like cruisers were slowly whittling the enemy down, but they were taking a lot of battering in return.
What do you need?
The Springhawk's ready to play base,
Arlani said.
I need you and the Grey Shrike to play Hunter.
Understood,
Roscoe said. So Thrawn was ready to initiate that part of his plan. Good. She and Zyenda had practiced this one extensively in the past 2 days, and she was looking forward to seeing how it worked in actual combat.
I'll be there and... Wait a second,
she said. One of the Chiss light cruisers had gotten a breacher through to the sky sweep's aft ventral flank. and the Grisk commander had responded by twisting out of line to keep the Chiss from following up with a laser barrage. Unfortunately for him, the maneuver had merely sent the vulnerable spot rolling across the Orison's own line of sight. "There!" she snapped, pointing. "Hit it! Now!" Ramus at the weapons board was on it. Even before Roscoe finished her order, the Orison's lasers were blazing at full intensity toward the pitted section of the Sky Sweep's hull. There was a glint of muted interior light as the lasers sliced through to the compartments beyond, and that entire section of the ship exploded violently. "Got it," Roscoe snarled. "Okay, Vigilant. The others can finish it off on their own. You have my vector? Sending it now," Arlani said. "Good work, all of you. Now get in position, Orison. And let's see if this actually works." The Springhawk's final salvo of breachers thundered toward the Armageddon, the last remaining Grisk mid-sized stone-crusher warship. Unfortunately, between the enemy's lasers and dibbers, the salvo ended up being as ineffective as all Simacro's previous attempts. Whoever was commanding this particular warship was damn good at his job.
"I'm out of breachers," he reported. "You have my new target?"
"Location and vector sent,"
Thrawn said.
"You heard the senior captain, Asmorty," Simacro said. "Get us out of here!"
"Acknowledged,"
Asmorty said, and the battle in Starscape twisted crazily as he put the Springhawk into a tight turn and accelerated away from the Armageddon with all the speed he could manage, which was considerably below the Springhawk's normal capabilities, Simacro noted uneasily. Like all the rest of the Chiss warships, he'd taken his share of damage from the battle, and reduced speed and maneuverability were a big part of that bundle. If the Armageddon decided to chase down its latest opponent and finish it off, the Springhawk would seem to be in serious trouble. If the Armageddon didn't see it that way, this whole careful setup would be for nothing. The Springhawk settled onto the vector Thrawn had sent, and Simacro smiled tightly. No, the Armageddon would come after him, all right. Thrawn was sending him directly toward a pair of injured battle chiefs fighting a group of patrol cruisers and Pakian gunboats. The Springhawk's sudden insertion into that melee would seriously tip the odds in the Chiss's favor, and he doubted Jixtus would let that happen without at least making an effort to stop it. Especially since saving the battle chiefs would have the bonus of giving the Armageddon the chance to eliminate the Springhawk and deprive Thrawn of one of his heavy cruisers.
"Springhawk, slow 4%,
Thrawn called.
"The Grey Shrike's in position, but the Orison's still on its way."
"Acknowledged," Simacro said, watching the tactical as Oskim obediently slowed the Springhawk's acceleration.
The Armageddon was still maintaining its own acceleration, he noted, possibly even picking up the pace a bit.
"Come on, Roscoe,"
he muttered under his breath.
"I'm here,"
Roscoe's voice came over the speaker.
"You can pick it up again, Springhawk.
In fact, increase your acceleration by 10%.
Thrawn put in.
"We want to make sure it can't evade."
"Acknowledged," Simacro said. "Oskim, 10% increase."
And as the Springhawk once again leapt forward, Simacro took a quick look out the sides of the bridge viewports. Thrawn had said that the Greyshrike and Orison were in position. Simacro hoped he was right, because he sure as hell couldn't see either of them. The Greyshrike was in position, directly in front of it, 5 kilometers away. The Orison faced it bow to bow, like some distant mirror image. In the distance off to the Greyshrike's port side, Zyenda could see the Springhawk racing along a line bisecting the one between her and the Orison. The Grisk Stonecrusher warship Armageddon was racing along behind it in hot pursuit. Not just in pursuit,
but closing rapidly.
Do we have a count? She called toward the mic.
We do.
Thrawn's calm voice came back.
Graceryke, Orison, locked breachers.
Breachers locked, Galaxu confirmed.
Breachers locked,
Ramus echoed from the Orison.
Stand ready,
Thrawn said.
3, 2, 1.
The Graceryke twitched, and the two breacher missiles Galaxu had set up blasted away, heading directly toward the Orison.
Zyenda watched the tactical, distantly aware that she was holding her breath. She'd already noted that the Grisk warships gave small, random tweaks to their speeds and accelerations, presumably as a way of thwarting any attempt by the Chiss to hit them with side-approach breachers or spheres. The critical question now was whether the Armageddon's commander would spot these two pairs of missiles, reflexively and incorrectly assume they were aimed at him, and take evasive action. Hopefully, he would instead wait for the numbers, realize the missiles were going to pass harmlessly well ahead of him, and continue on with his goal of chasing down and destroying the Springhawk.
Track confirmed, Galaxu said softly, as if afraid talking too loudly would disturb the missiles' paths. Orison track confirmed.
Ahead, the Springhawk flashed across the intersect line ahead of the missiles, still running from the Armageddon for all it was worth. A fraction of a second later, the breachers from the Graceryke and those from the Orison slammed together nose to nose. They're exactly equal and exactly opposite vectors, canceling out to bring all four missiles to an instantaneous halt. An instant after that, the metal-crushing impact shattered them, sending a thick acid cloud bursting outward directly in the Armageddon's path. And with less than half a second's warning and no chance to do anything else, the Grisk warship drove straight through the cloud.
Got it!
Ramus shouted triumphantly.
Springhawk, you're clear.
I see it.
Semakro's voice came back.
As Morty, you're 180. Let's take it down. Orison, move to assist.
Thrawn ordered.
We can help too,
Zyenda put in, a flicker of old reflexive suspicion running through her. Surely Thrawn wasn't trying to squeeze her out of her share of the glory again, was he?
You're needed elsewhere, Graceryke,
Thrawn said.
Get over to Aphros' gunboat as quickly as you can. Jixis has figured us out.
Chapter 27.
Uh-oh, Arlani said. Two of the Grisk battle chiefs had abruptly broken off from the Chiss forces and were on the move, heading straight for the Pakian gunship that held the Vagari gravity well generator.
Thrawn, she called.
I see it,
he said.
Meet Captain Aphros. I think you've been identified. Get ready to run.
Understood, Senior Captain.
Aphros' voice came tightly over the vigilant speaker.
Am I still on the primary vector?
Yes,
Thrawn said.
Turn onto it now, but hold position until your attackers have delivered their first warning. Then turn off the field and run at full acceleration.
Arlani felt her stomach tighten. The gravity well generator ate up a lot of the power that could otherwise be utilized by the drive and enhanced electrostatic barrier Wingali had added to the gunboat while the Springhawk's techs were busy getting the generator installed. On an immediate tactical level, it made sense for Aphros to do his running with the generator off. But on a slightly longer strategic level...
I'll tell you when to turn it back on,
Thrawn continued.
At that time, you'll also dump the rest of your load of smoke.
Understood, sir,
Aphros said.
Standing ready.
Arlani keyed the comm back from the general to Thrawn's private frequency.
You sure you want the Grisks to have a clear shot? She asked.
We need them to,
Thrawn said.
Their first shot will be from a distance, and we need them to think that the gunboat has extra protection.
Which it does.
Yes, though not the kind they assume,
Thrawn said.
I want them thinking they need to get closer, possibly to point-blank range, before they fire again.
You realize how risky that is, don't you?
Arlani warned.
We could lose it all.
Not all,
Thrawn assured her.
But I agree, it would make the rest of the battle far more costly.
Arlani nodded, acutely aware that the rest of the Vigilance Bridge was listening in on this conversation. She was the senior officer on the scene, which meant that she should be the one making these victory or defeat decisions. Handing them off to Thrawn or anyone else still made the end result her responsibility.
I could go to his assistance, she offered.
You can't get there any faster than the Grey Shrike,
Thrawn pointed out.
Besides, right now the Vigilant is the only thing keeping the Fate Spinner pinned down and out of the battle. I need you right where you are.
Understood.
Arlani keyed back to the general frequency. Unfortunately, he was right on both counts.
Everyone stay sharp, she called. Apros, good luck.
Syenda had hoped she would be able to cut off one of the Grisk battle chiefs, which would at least have left Apros with only one enemy warship on his immediate tail. But the Breacher ambush had put the Grey Shrike too far away, and had taken her momentum too far down. Even with the best speed Wickiv could coax out of the drive, it was clear both battle chiefs would get to Apros first. Syenda was still racing across the battleground when the enemy opened fire. The laser blasts were simultaneous. Twin stabs of energy blazing across the sky into the spiraling black smoke that still twisted slowly out of Apros' gunboat. Syenda braced herself, leaning forward in her seat. And then, like a flash fly escaping its cocoon, the gunboat blasted out of the encircling smoke and took off, headed away from the planet. Syenda felt a small surge of relief. So the metal-infused slurry that the Pockian techs had created really had diffused the Grisk lasers the way Wingali had promised it would. And now, with the smoke and presumably surprised Grisks behind him, Apros opened up the gunboat's thrusters at full power.
Woo!
Vimsk commented from the sensor station as the gunboat leapt forward like a scalded stingfly.
Who lit a fire under him?
Mid-Captain Apros said the Pakash did some upgrades on the thrusters,
Wickiv said.
I didn't realize how upgraded they were.
Easy, Apros.
Thrawn's voice came over the Grey Shrike speaker.
Don't get so far ahead that they give up the chase.
But also, don't let them get close enough to kill you,
Syenda wanted to add. But Thrawn and Arlani were in command here, and Syenda knew better than to throw conflicting orders into the mix. Once again, her only hope was that Thrawn knew what he was doing. A laser flashed across the sky, glancing off the Grey Shrike's bow.
Evasive!
Syenda ordered. Wickiv pitched the Grey Shrike upward, out of the laser's focus, as Galaxu fired back at the battle chief that had taken that shot at them. But with that attack, and that single twitch off its path, there was no longer any chance the Grey Shrike could get to Apros' pursuers before they settled into chase positions behind him. It was all up to Apros and Thrawn now. And to the surprise, Thrawn had only half promised he could deliver. Once again, a drama was about to play out at the far side of the battleground. Once again, Thrawn was rolling the dice and making an outrageous bet. Only this time, Kilori knew, it would be the Chiss side that was going to lose. At least it would be quick. Even as the gunboat raced for its life, the two Grisk battle chiefs were steadily closing the gap between them. The gunboat was well outside Sunrise's gravity well now, which suggested that the only reason it hadn't jumped to the safety of hyperspace was that it couldn't. But of course it couldn't. Not with a gravity well generator blasting away right on top of its hyperdrive. Kilori's winglets twitched. Odd. Earlier, it had looked like the commander could turn the generator on and off. Why wasn't he doing so now? Had Kilori simply been mistaken about that? No, he'd read that scene correctly. All he could think of was that having a generator operating that close to the hyperdrive had somehow caused some damage. The stories about such tech didn't say anything about any side effects, but such stories were seldom fully reliable. Either way, the gunboat's commander had apparently been left with the lone option of running as fast as his ship could manage and hoping his pursuers would lose interest or be called back to the main battle. He couldn't even turn away to try to find refuge near one of the bigger Chiss ships. His pursuers were far too close for that. All he could do was run. And in the end, he would still die. That end would come soon enough, Kilori knew. The whetstone's tactical display marked a sudden faltering of the gunboat's drive. A warning twitch that the thrusters were about to fail. A distant puff of black appeared, the commander perhaps making a last futile bid to throw off his pursuers by disappearing into a smokescreen. There was a flash of laser fire as one of the battle chiefs took a shot into the cloud. Abruptly, a dozen new ships appeared, spread out in loose battle array in the space directly in front of the gunboat. Kilori felt his winglets flatten against his cheeks in shock. And as the fleeing gunboat sped harmlessly through the center of their formation, all 12 ships opened fire on the Grisks. From the calm, Jixtus snarled something in the Grisk language, the words sounding both furious and disbelieving.
Kilori?
He bit out.
Who are those? What are those?
I don't know, Kilori said. All I know is...
He broke off, as in the distance, the two battle chiefs at the center of the firestorm disintegrated in a pair of violent explosions.
All I know, Kilori said weakly, is the Chiss seem to have found some new allies.
I greet you, Senior Captain Thrawn.
The Minisiat words came over the vigilant speaker, spoken by a familiar voice.
Your timing and positioning were exactly as promised. I trust our timing was equally so.
It was indeed, Senior Security Chief Frangine,
Thrawn assured him.
We are in the Garwin Unity's debt.
No more than the Ruleri are in yours,
Frangine said, his voice going grim.
Long have we wondered if there was a power behind General Yiv and his threats against the Unity and the Garwian people. Long have we wondered if there would be more such threats. Ruleri sent you for answering both questions and for giving us this chance to settle the balance.
And that the back combine.
Another voice joined into the conversation, this one inside Bisti. Arlani didn't recognize this particular speaker, but the ship identification that had already come up on the Vigilance sensor display was again exactly as Thrawn had promised.
We now owe the Chiss Ascendancy a second debt.
The Combine is already repaid,
Thrawn assured him.
as has the Unity. The Ascendancy thanks you for your assistance.
The Unity's assistance is hardly at an end,
Frangelix said.
Not when there are still others who need to feel our vengeance.
The Combine agrees,
the Bat Commander said.
Vengeance is yours for the taking,
Thrawn said.
If you wish to coordinate with our forces, you may do so through Admiral Aralani. If not, I request only that you avoid damaging our warships.
Admiral! Behind you!
Apros cut in. Aralani's eyes shifted to the rear display. The only ship that should be back there was the Fate Spinner, floating along in its low orbit. Only Jixis was no longer sitting in defensive posture. The massive warship was on the move, skating along the upper atmosphere as it drove away from the Vigilant along the underside of the battle, apparently intent on getting to the far end of the battleground, or of finding an open path among the brawling ships through which it could escape.
Octremo, full power, intercept course!
She snapped, cursing to herself as she looked at the tactical. The sensors showed that the Fate Spinner still had some thruster damage from the Stingfly's breacher attack, but Jixis had clearly been able to make sufficient repairs to get his warship underway. It was moving along at a good clip, faster than Aralani would have expected it capable of. It was her fault, and it was going to cost her. Distracted by the battle, and her own relief at the arrival of the Garweans and Vax from the asteroid cluster, where they'd hidden while they decided whether or not to join the battle, she'd forgotten to keep an eye on the Fate Spinner. Now, with the Vigilant starting from essentially a dead stop, there was no way she could build up enough speed to intercept the Grisk warship before it cleared the battle and escaped Sunrise's gravity well. She looked at the tactical. If the Vigilant couldn't stop Jixis, maybe someone else could. Every ship of Thrawn's fleet had taken damage, but the Orison and Springhawk should still have enough firepower to stand a fair chance against the Fate Spinner. But the Orison was already deeply embroiled in a skirmish with one of the remaining battle chiefs. And even if Roscoe broke free right now, she was at the same speed disadvantage as the Vigilant. The Springhawk had just helped finish off one of the other battle chiefs and was therefore theoretically free for a new mission, but its thrusters had taken a lot of damage, and it wasn't really in position for an intercept. But Aralani had to try.
Springhawk! The Fate Spinner's on the move, she called. Can you get to it?
I'll try, Vigilant,
Simacro said.
Coming around now. Asmordi?
I don't think so, White Captain.
Asmordi's voice came faintly from the Vigilant speakers.
Thrusters are down to 15%. Unless Jixis makes a mistake, I don't think we can reach him before he's clear.
That's all right, Springhawk.
Apros's voice cut in.
I've got it.
Aralani frowned. With her contingency plans focused on the Fate Spinner and the heavier battle-line Chiss warships, she'd almost forgotten Apros and his gunboat. But there he was, blazing at full power at an angle across the battleground, oblivious to the flashing lasers and driving missiles all around him, heading with his gravity well generator to intercept Jixis and block his escape. Or rather, to block it until he reached combat range and died in a flurry of Grisk laser fire. Thrawn had clearly run the same thought process.
Apros, break off,
he ordered.
You're too vulnerable. We'll find another way to stop him.
With respect, Senior Captain.
I don't think so,
Apros said.
I've got the same tactical data you do. You can't reach him in time. But I can hold him long enough for the Vigilant or Springhawk to get there.
You can't go in alone,
Aralani insisted.
He's not alone,
Zyenda put in.
Apros, shift to the vector I've just sent you.
Arulani looked at the tactical, focusing on the Grey Shrike's current combat condition. It wasn't any better than the Springhawks.
Grey Shrike, you've got nothing left but lasers,
she reminded Zyenda.
You're not in any shape to take on the Fate Spinner.
I'm not going to take it on,
Zyenda said.
Aphros and I are going to run in parallel, with the Grey Shrike staying between him and the Fate Spinner. It'll take Jixis a lot of time and a lot of firepower to turn us into scrap. As long as there's enough of the Grey Shrike left to shield the gunboat, we'll still have him pinned. Aphros?
I agree, Senior Captain,
Aphros said, his voice tight but firm.
Let's do it. And whatever happens, it's been an honor to serve with you.
Now with you, Captain,
Zyenda said.
Moving close to my starboard. And let's show Jixis what it means to take on the Chiss Ascendancy.
The Fate Spinner was on the move, slipping away right out from under the noses of the Chiss who were supposed to be watching him. The big Shatterclass Warmaster was skittering across Sunrise's upper atmosphere, searching for a gap in the battleground where it could safely drive up out of the gravity well and make its escape. Against all odds, Jixis had pulled victory from defeat. Kilori looked at the tactical, his winglets waving slowly. Though if this was a victory, it was a vanishingly small one. Jixis had brought 15 massive warships to Sunrise. Of that number, 8 had already been destroyed or disabled, including all 3 of his stone crushers. The 6 remaining battle chiefs were still fighting, but he doubted they would survive much longer. And while they were tearing viciously into the Chiss forces swarming around them, it was abundantly clear who was going to win the day. And the victor hadn't been Jixis. Or had it? Because there were certain advantages to being the only survivor of a battle like this. If Jixis escaped while the other Grisk forces died, it would be he and he alone who would tell the story of what had happened today. His 15 ships had gone up against 19 Chiss warships, plus 21 Pakosh, Garwians, and Vax. But who knew if that was what the Grisk leadership would hear? Perhaps it would hear that 15 Grisks had fought to the death against 100 Chiss, or 200, or 3. Perhaps such a story would persuade the Grisks to avoid this part of the chaos in the future. More likely, it would simply ensure they would send an entire armada the next time. In that case, not only would the Chiss be doomed, but so would everyone else in the region. And if the Grisks continued to employ the strange alien attendants as their navigators, that doom might not stop at Concourse 447, or all the rest of the Pathfinder bases, or at the Pathfinders themselves. Kilori's winglets suddenly stiffened. Yes, Jixis' story would be the only one told, but only as long as there were no other witnesses to the Grisk debacle. Witnesses such as the remaining Kilgis. Witnesses such as Kilori. The Fate Spinner was moving up behind and beneath the whetstone, and from the sudden slowing of its acceleration, Kilori could tell that Jixis had spotted the opening he was looking for. If he turned in the next 30 or 40 seconds, he could angle up, slip through the gap before anyone could move to stop him, and be gone. And on the way to that gap, he would pass directly in front of the whetstone. Kilori looked at the Kilji vassals, still hunched over their consoles.
General Arius Nakir called you his vassals, he reminded them. Jixis called the whetstone a pathetic little war cruiser. Do you agree with either of them?
The Kilji at the helm raised his head a little.
We are as he says,
he said in a low voice.
We can make no move, nor create any thought without our master.
Kilori looked desperately at the tactical. There had to be something he could do to revive these brain-deadened aliens. Maybe the answer was right there in front of him.
Without your master?
He asked.
Or without a master?
This time, all the heads came up a little.
What do you say?
The pilot asked.
I say that I am your new master,
Kilori replied, with all the confidence and bravado he could manage.
I will lead you until you can return to your people.
And suddenly, the Kilgis all sat upright, their hands once again poised over their controls.
What do you order?
The pilot asked.
How quickly can the peace sealing be removed from the Whetstone's lasers and missile tubes?
Kilori asked.
Very quickly.
Do it!
One of the Kilgis keyed a series of controls, and Kilori felt a sputtering shudder through the deck as a series of explosive bolts detonated.
Weapons are clear,
the Kilgi confirmed.
Good,
Kilori said, wondering distantly if he was really doing this. The Navigators Guild forbade its members from engaging in any military activity.
The Fate Spitter is about to pass in front of us. When it does, we're going to show Jixtus what a Kilgi war cruiser can do.
Which weapons do you wish us to use?
The Kilgi at the weapons station asked. Kilori looked again at the tactical.
All of them,
he said.
At point-blank range, as accurately as you can.
I obey.
Tell me when you're ready.
Another pair of ships had appeared now on the tactical. The Pakian gunship carrying the gravity well generator, and one of the two Chiss heavy cruisers. They were angling on an intercept vector, clearly hoping to get to the Fate Spinner before it cleared the battleground and keep it from escaping. Kilori's winglets flattened. He would show them what a Kilgi war cruiser could do, too.
Weapons ready!
The Kilgi's hands stretched out over the board as he keyed the various switches. And suddenly, for no apparent reason, Kilori's mind flashed back to Thrawn's warship as they chased the hammer from the Rapox system. Kilori sitting at the nav station, wondering why the chair was set so far forward. He stared at the Kilgi's arms and hands. Kilgi arms stretched over their boards. Chiss arms presumably stretched the same way over theirs. Only the two spans were different, with the Chiss one markedly smaller. And then it hit him. The truth. The strange, inexplicable truth slammed squarely into his head. The Chiss navigators were children. The revelation vanished into the mists of Kilori's mind as the reality of the moment rushed back over him. The Fate Spinner was coming into range, angling up right where Kilori had expected it to, trying to get through the gap before the shifting forces moving across the battleground sealed it closed. The warship would cross in front of the Whetstone, barely 300 meters away.
Fire!
Kilori said. And as the viewport erupted in a blazing firestorm of laser fire and missile explosions, the Fate Spinner's entire starboard aft flank disintegrated. For a long moment, an awed, disbelieving silence filled the Greyshrike's bridge.
Well?
Vimsk managed at last.
That's something you don't see every day either.
No, it's not, Zyanda agreed. Meet Captain Apros?
Yes, ma'am.
You can throttle back a little, she told him. I don't think there's any rush now. Admiral Arulani?
Yes, he's off, Apros,
Arulani confirmed.
In fact, both of you head toward the Aelos. I'll rendezvous with you along the way and escort you back. I think the battle is just about over.
But it wasn't. Not completely.
Jesus.
Thrawn called, his voice sounding oddly subdued as it came from the Vigilance bridge speaker.
Are you still there?
For the moment.
Jixtus's voice came back. There was pain there, Arulani could tell, and a quiet anger. But mostly what she could hear was resignation.
Are you calling to gloat?
No,
Thrawn said.
I wanted to state our terms of surrender and offer medical aid for your people.
You know I can't accept,
Jixtus said.
Neither you nor any other Chiss is ever to see our faces or know our forms. Not until we sit on the thrones of the ancient kings of Chila.
Arulani tensed. The last time they'd wrecked a Grisk warship.
All ships, move immediately away from the Grisks,
she ordered urgently.
Even the wrecks, move away now!
Actually, there are no such thrones or ancient kings,
Thrawn corrected mildly.
But I understand your meaning. I look forward to our next encounter with your people.
An instant later, all across the battleground, the Grisk warships exploded. All of them, except the Fate Spinner.
A question, if I may.
Jixtus continued calmly, as if he hadn't just ordered the final destruction of his fleet and his warriors.
Just to satisfy my curiosity. There are no major scenes, are there? Not aboard your ships, nor on Sunrise.
No. There are none that I know of,
Thrawn confirmed.
The Magus has told me that she is the only one. Still, even an imaginary bargaining point can be of use.
Provided the enemy strongly wishes to believe in it,
Jixtus said, a hint of bitterness coloring his tone.
I wish you luck in dealing with her in the future. Perhaps you will find yourself regretting that you allowed her and her people to live.
There may indeed be challenges,
Thrawn said.
But I'm sure we'll find solutions.
Arulani looked at the tactical, running her eyes over the status reports from the various ships, noting to her relief that the Grisk ship explosions hadn't inflicted any additional damage. Again, just as with the last Grisk warship self-destruction, each of these explosions had shattered everything to tiny, harmless bits, in order to prevent any useful analysis of the debris.
You and your allies,
Jixtus countered, his voice now mocking.
You and the Pekosh, Garwins, and Vax. Don't fool yourself, Thrawn of the Chiss. You are no different from we of the Grisks. Neither of us has allies, but only enemies and servants.
You're wrong,
Thrawn said.
Allies of convenience are still allies. Consider the irony that it was your own statements that finally convinced them to fight alongside us.
But they hate you,
Jixtus insisted.
All of them. They hate and fear the Chiss. Why would they work with their enemies?
We aren't their enemies,
Thrawn said.
I doubt most of them actually hate us. Though I'll concede that they fear the Ascendancy. Or at the very least, distrust it.
Then why would they ally with you?
Because,
Thrawn said, and Ar'alani thought she could hear a note of sadness in his voice.
At this one time, and in this one place, we were the lesser evil.
I see,
Jixtus said.
Then enjoy your victory, Thrawn of the Chiss. It will be your last.
How so?
Your career is over,
Jixtus said.
Possibly your life as well. Certainly, your leaders will demand you pay a crushing price for your treason this day. Especially given the short-sighted overindulgence in the pursuit of personal power and family honor.
Ar'alani looked across the bridge, saw the quietly pained expression on Wutro's face. Yes, the Syndicure would demand Thrawn pay, all right. It would likely make all of them pay, in fact.
The Griss will be back,
Jixtus continued, his voice cold and dark and malevolent.
But you will not be here to stand against them. I wish you and your allies the pleasure of this final memory as you watch your worlds burn.
And as Ar'alani looked out the viewport, the Fate Spinner followed its fellow Grisk ships into annihilation.
All ships secure from battle stations,
Thrawn called, sounding as tired as Ar'alani suddenly felt.
Report damage and injuries to the Vigilant.
There was a tone as he keyed to a wider comm broadcast.
Kilori of Uwanduwanon, this is Senior Captain Thrawn. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Senior Captain.